This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Hi, good afternoon now. It's been such a pleasure to listen to you, Asha. Everything you've said, it's almost like we're planned, you know, because what I'm going to say is going to reinforce so many things that you've talked about, and I would love to be a teacher at your college. My experience, I mean, you'll notice that I've added engaging teachers, learners, motivation and quality improvement through emotionally intelligent leadership throughout the school. And I wondered why you think Asha's College might be like a big piece of broccoli. I've done my shopping this morning. We're having broccoli tonight. But a bit about that later. I'm sure Asha knows. Well, we'll go back to the piece of broccoli later. This is going to be interactive because it's been quite interesting this morning that we're about teaching and learning. We've been very, you've been very static, so you're going to be doing some stuff. Not getting up and singing Wheels on the Bus, but actually just doing some talking and thinking. My view, having been a teacher and been a head teacher, and for the last 5 years delivered lots of training on teaching and learning for teachers in FE, in primary, in secondary, because I spanned the whole full range. It's that idea that actually the key is absolutely in emotional intelligence, leadership of your teams, leadership in the classroom, leadership through your students, etc. And the way towards that, in my view, is something like this. Now, this is for you to do. Now, imagine your mood. I want you to think about it now. Imagine at this end, you were in the most fantastic mood, just about to go on the most wonderful holiday, and that's 10 out of 10. And the other end of this line is pretty much gloom and doom and despondency. And about halfway is about 5, about average, about sort of feeling okay. I just want you to think in your mind eye now what mood you're in. Just what mood, 1 to 10, just in your mind think. Everyone got it? Everyone got where they are? Right, then what I want you to do is just turn to the person next to you and put them in a better mood. Push up their scale. Go on, you've got 30 seconds to do it. It's my challenge. Thank you. Well, there's lots of smiling in the room, so I assume you all use an effective strategy. But it's very interesting, isn't it? And I know that Asha will sort of bear me out on this one, and yourselves in your staff room. The power of people to influence each other's state of mind. And also, of course, when you're in a good mood, you've got that energy, you're open-minded, and you're brave. All the things you need to be a great learner. So actually being aware and having that sort of moment of metacognition, standing back and thinking, yeah, what mood am I in and why? And is it my choice? Is it my decision? Can I change it? Because actually lots of the learners that come into our classroom for all sorts of very good reasons are in moods that are not constructive for learning. And actually giving them that sort of idea that there might be another way to think, another way to be, another way to change their mood, even by standing up and talking or even trying to cheer someone else up. Very powerful for learning, I think. If we want energetic, open-minded, brave teachers, we also need to become aware of exactly what it feels like to be powerful in influencing each other's moods for the good, and not being that negative drain in the staff room, that negative sort of person that's always feeling as if nothing could work out. And really, to me, that sense of being in control of your mood, and we all get in bad moods occasionally, is part of that sort of thinking skill stuff that makes you able to be as emotionally intelligent as you can as a leader. Because as leaders, for all of us, and for all different levels in your organisation, it's tough. The accountability, the pressure, the human relationships we've got to manage are so tough. But what I've found, I've been a school improvement partner for the last few years as well. And I've been working with schools, advising heads and doing performance management and various things. And I've managed to, two of my schools have managed to become outstanding in that period of time. And it's just been a fantastic journey. One thing I always feel is that you can feel it. You walk into an institution or an organisation that is outstanding, you can feel it. You can absolutely feel it. That sense of wanting to be there. You know, if your students want to be at your college and just are proud to be at your college, that's huge, and your staff as well. That idea of sort of having a real distributed leadership where everybody, right from the top through to the bottom, is actually feeling responsible and proud to be part of this organisation. And the last thing, which I probably found the hardest when I was head, the relentless high expectations, but with the tough love bit, that you have got to be prepared to get rid of people and to put them on competency and all those things, because actually that tough love thing is where, you know, all the values that you've got about learning being important, if learning's important, it's got to take priority over people's careers when it's the wrong time for them to be with you. And I'm sure all of you who have that responsibility will agree. So I suppose this idea of outstanding being tangible sort of leads to the idea that we're driven by data. And one of my titles in my presentation was about quality assurance, and can we get quality assurance through data, which we can. We can set targets, we can have expectations, we can track the targets. But I wanted to talk about the fact that actually my view is that actually the habits of your organisation, those unconscious behaviours, are what creates outstanding. And that's where the fractal nature of organisations come in. That's where the broccoli comes in. Because I went to Marks & Spencer's and I was trying to get broccoli because they were good, it all cut up, there's no good. So I had to find another shop with a big piece of broccoli. Because this piece of broccoli, actually, every little bit of it, if I broke it off, would be the same as the whole shape. So each tiny bit, when you break it off, it will have the same shape. And that's a bit like, I imagine, Ashes College and every outstanding school I've been in is like. Wherever you go, the reception, or to the child in the classroom, or the library, or the caretaker's office, or the classroom, or the senior leadership team's room, there's the same drive, the same passion for learning, the same feeling that actually, you know, you're getting that same consistent outcome. And I find that in teaching and learning, the biggest problem is consistency. You've got huge organisations to manage. Therefore, getting that consistency is a huge challenge. And to get that sense of every part of your organisation being representing the ethos, the culture that you want to represent is really actually going to be part of the habits of your staff. So at your college, just wondering, you know, are the habits of your staff mirrored by the students? You know, what are the habits? You know, what are the habits of your leaders? You know, are they staying late? Are there habits of positivity and talking up the organisation or talking it down? Are there habits amongst the students of being ambitious and aspirational? And it's so contagious. Because moods are contagious, habits are contagious. And those habits are almost like programs, pre-programmed in, you know, ready to sort of just be performed without even thinking about it. And it's nurturing those outstanding habits of learning and of commitment and of passion and delivery amongst your staff that are actually going to create that tangible feeling of outstanding excellence in the school. I suppose my reason I'm passionate about learning, and you know, I think if you can focus on learning, as we've already heard, it will enable the students and the teachers to be responsive to change. Now, I love change, and I really enjoy change, and I think the thing that most teachers say is, oh, not more change, not something different. And if we can persuade them to absolutely embrace it and to love it and to know that every time they do something different and rise to that challenge, actually what's going to happen is they're going to be stronger and more able to cope next time, that is the sort of nurturing of that attitude we need to nurture in staff, so that they, in turn, model it for the students. And the teacher as a role model for the students is so powerful. We all know that students can be turned around by the mentoring and coaching of one particular teacher that they gained a rapport with. And so having as many of your teachers who've got that sense of, you know, I love change, I can manage change, I've got a can-do attitude, is very powerful for all, as a model for all your students. My background, you know, Trish is here from the Campaign for Learning, and I've for many, many years worked with the Campaign for Learning, and I think they're a fantastic organisation, and we've just been doing some work on FE, she's going to tell you about later. And the whole learning to learn model is where what inspired me in terms of teaching and learning and made me realise that why the teaching I was doing was working and getting great results, because of understanding the neuroscience aspect, understanding how learning works, understanding how to engage emotional brains with a piece of broccoli. You're probably going to remember this more than anything else from this day, because obviously, you know, when it comes to it, engaging our emotional brains helps us remember stuff. And we do that through novelty and humour and something a bit different and something that gains rapport with the audience. Just thinking about your leaders, and I'm thinking leadership right the way down from the top, your leader, your principal, your vice principals, right through to your teachers, your heads of subject, your heads of department. These sorts of qualities that come from obviously Daniel Goleman's work, and they're actually pretty important, aren't they? And we heard these actually from Asha in her presentation. The whole idea of building that sort of success, of creating that sense of true rapport, and rapport being able to be flexible about whoever I'm communicating with, whether it is the parent, the bolshy student, or whether it's the teacher, the young teacher that's just started work and is finding it hard, that I can adapt my communication style to totally tune in with where they are. And we all know the best teachers absolutely know with their students what they did at the weekend, what their hobbies are, what their interests are. And with the most challenging students, can just zoom in on that particular interest and engage them. And I was very disappointed and totally felt sympathetic when I heard about your concerns earlier about children coming from school into college completely unskilled, you know, in terms of their literacy, numeracy. They haven't got the skills you need to do what you want to do with them. They're starting from fresh, and it shouldn't be like that. And I seem to spend so much of my time in schools trying to get, and obviously we've got the assessment, the exams and the league tables. Absolutely agree, it's been a huge challenge to make sure that we are delivering a programme of study that engages learners and that is practical and experiential and is active and creates independence. And we're not doing it. We're not doing it well enough, certainly. So I completely agree with you on that one. Just moving on. Other leadership competencies. Self-awareness. You know, this is, the key to emotional intelligence is knowing yourself, knowing your strengths, your weaknesses, and being prepared to do something about them. And just have a little think about this one. Self-confidence, you know, What drives you? What drives you? What holds you back? You know, what makes you happy? You know, have you got the balance right? Have you got in your college that sort of sense of coaching each other, whereby we admit our mistakes? We don't mind admitting when things are tough and hard. Have you got that collegial approach? Are you really collaborative in sharing resources? Just to get you thinking about that, I've got a little model here that actually came about when I was teaching communications A-level, which is a very interesting A-level to teach at my school. And I was teaching that as a head teacher. And I've always found this little model, which some of you may have seen before, quite useful. The idea is that self-disclosure feeds emotional intelligence. If I said to you many years ago, the reason I'm standing here today is because I was phobic about public speaking. I was so phobic about public speaking, I gave it up and had children to escape. And then I sort of realised that actually that was not going to be an escape, because if it wasn't public speaking, it would be something else. And there's a lot of anxiety out there, isn't there, in the world? There's a lot of anxiety in students, and anxiety is fed by fear. And fear is fed by people finding out and judging you and thinking you're no good or you might not be very good. And so I suppose this little model, the reason I like it is because I think it's a real way to overcome some of those fears, fears of change, fears of pushing yourself that bit harder, fears of exposing yourself to making mistakes and getting it wrong. So what this is all about is that there's bits about you that everyone knows. You know, what classes you teach, think about your teachers here, you know, what classes you teach, what your name is, what your background is, maybe some about your family. There's open stuff. There's other stuff. There's blind stuff. There's stuff that others know about you, and they might talk about it in the staff room, and they don't really tell you. So there's stuff you don't, other people know about you, but you don't know. Now, I wonder, just thinking about it, do you know what other people say about you in the staff room? Do you know what the chat is? You know what they might be saying? Would you like to hazard a guess on it? You know, and if you don't, I once did this with some head teachers, actually. And one of the head teachers said, yeah, I don't want to know. And I thought, oops, you know, the trouble is that if you don't know, people will talk, but if you, that blind bit is danger. It's danger because if you don't know, a bit like Gaddafi, if you don't know what's going on, how are you going to do something about it? And then there's the hidden bits. There's the stuff you know, but other people don't know because you don't really want to tell them. Because actually, maybe you're struggling with that class. Maybe you had a big, maybe you've got a parent meeting you're dreading. Maybe you've got a presentation you're dreading. Maybe it makes you feel sick to come to college every day because of something that's frightening you and causing you anxiety. And that hidden stuff is dangerous because actually that hidden stuff and that blind stuff, actually that's the stuff that can come back and bite you. Now, how can you overcome this? By the way, the unknown bit is all your unknown potential, all that mysterious stuff that might happen to you sometime in the future. You know, unknown potential there. Now, the interesting thing is, my view is if we want confident staff and students and leaders, then we really need to have a culture where we widen up the open one. Now, how do you do that? This is a growth mindset. Carol Dweck, anybody read Carol Dweck? I very sadly took it on holiday with me. That's the sort of sad person I am. Carol Dweck, fixed mindset, growth mindset. I'm sure you've... Anyway, growth mindset, Carol Dweck. It's about that whole idea of realising that the more you talk to other people about these things, like I've just confided one of my innermost secrets about my fear of presenting... the more confident you are because you haven't got anything hidden. The more you share the things that you struggle with, the more someone else will share with you what they struggle with. And the more, like, teachers as learners, teachers owning up, you know, I don't know about this. Can you find out for me to the students and them, feeding back? Those sorts of things. So just want you to take a moment, just perhaps to have a think about this. You know, is there something, you know, that whole idea of, at this moment, usually if I'm doing a workshop, we'll sort of, let's share a secret, let's share a mistake or something we've done. But just have a think about that, whether it's something that you could just think for a moment about. Is there something that perhaps in your college, do you think people do have that openness, that a bit confidence? Because that's what gives you confidence, being able to share and not be judged. Just take a moment to talk to the person next to you about that. Just 30 seconds. Okay, thank you. Sorry to interrupt. Got you talking. An interesting one, and interesting to with this one, I suppose, the ultimate of being open and having a sort of open self-disclosure in your college is how much do you get that feedback from students? Do your teachers actually ask the students for feedback on the lessons? I don't know how many of you do that. Some of you are nodding. What do you do with that information? Certainly, we can learn so much from students giving us feedback. Do you have students observing lessons and delivering insight about what's happening? Certainly, I did that with some year eights in my school. And to be honest, it's one of those things that you learn so much more from the students than you could ever believe you would do. And when they deliver the inset, it's very, very powerful, the CPD. And the other thing that one school's doing, you're having your mini student body doing your own CEF, your own Ofsted report. You know, I think there's a college in Northamptonshire doing that. Has anybody got that organised at their school, where you actually have a team of students that actually do your own mini inspection based on criteria? They go in and they look at all the different aspects of the college, and they write a report, and they realise, and it helps them, of course, as well, in terms of their buy-in to the leadership of the college. So I suppose the ultimate of this model is really there is no such thing as failure, only feedback. That actually, if we can really believe that if we're constantly renewing and getting feedback and we're constantly sharing and we don't keep things secret or hidden or be in denial, then we're always going to continue to grow. And I think that's quite a powerful model. So moving on, it fits in with all the ideas of, you know, leadership, the leadership competencies. And when we think about all of these leadership competencies, you know, the transparency, you know, being open as a leader, being able to hold your hand up as a leader and say, yeah, well, actually, I've got that wrong. Being adaptable, having that sort of sense of optimism. And I wonder, you know, just have a thought, you know, how do you rate yourself on these? That there's such crucial aspects of leadership, but what about your middle leaders? What about your leaders of department? Are they able to function well? And do they know, out of these aspects of self-management, which are their strengths? Which are the ones they want to build on? Do you have a coaching model where you can help those that are strong on, say, initiative and optimism, help supporting others and paired up and buddying up with other members of staff who perhaps are better at, say, adaptability? And you get that sort of great combination of a coaching model, where the coaching model is all about just asking the right questions, challenging in the right places, that you can force everybody to be a little bit more aware of their strengths. I think when I was head, certainly, and I don't, tell me if this is true in your experience, but relationship management, managing the fallouts, the little petty squabbles, the unhappinesses that derive from working in a community with all different people. Does anybody find that is their biggest challenge in school? Just that whole constant sort of, there's always something, someone, and it's so important, and it's hugely difficult to manage, and obviously we can't manage it all, and we have good people perhaps in place to manage those things. But I think that's our biggest challenge, is actually getting the relationship so that we want to over-deliver for each other in an institution. So we want to share. When we get a new idea for a lesson and some piece of work, we want to go and share it immediately with our department and then build on it. And we don't sort of keep it to ourselves. We want to share it and build on it and then share it back again. And that whole idea of building great resources, that we're not all having to invent the wheel again. And I think relationship management, one of the key competencies there. So have a reflection on that. Now, I suppose, you know, your vision, you know, one of my titles here was engaging them in what? Engaging your teachers, making them motivated, engaging your learners. Thinking about going back to, I love continuums, and I find actually continuums very useful for measuring progress students are making with learning in the classroom. And I suppose for me, in the continuum, it's less about a grade, it's more about a journey. And you know, that whole idea of learning is a journey, and we start at the beginning and we're moving towards a vision at the end. Now, I was wondering, where are you in terms of the habits that you would like, the emotionally intelligent habits you would like your staff to have in your college? Where do you think you are? You know, if your vision was that sort of real, engaged, you know, top-down piece of broccoli where everything represented that sort of committed, passionate about learning feeling, wonder where you think you are now. Just have a little talk to your next-door neighbour just for half a minute. Where do you think you are now with that vision towards real engagement?
Scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah. Scale of 1 to 10 if it helps, but just have a little, just a reflection on it, just for 30 seconds. Okay, thank you. Thank you for that little reflection time. Anybody feel they're there now? They've got there. They've reached their destination. I suppose it sort of goes on and on, doesn't it? Even when you reach it, then you may create a new destination. But I suppose whenever I talk to teachers and we do work on teaching and learning, I think that creating learners, the learners that are leaving your college, loving learning and being in the habit of being great learners might be a fantastic vision for you in terms of the moving on. And that's really what I want to see nurtured in every classroom, right? You know, every school classroom, so that when they do come to you, they do actually are passionate about learning, because actually learning is not synonymous with pleasure for many children in our schools, unless, of course, they are constantly getting the A's and the success that we all, you know, tell them is the most important thing. And when they come to your college, they do the things that do give them pleasure. You know, they do some of the practical things that they love, and they start believing they can be great learners. And that's the magic thing about the important job that there is in FE. For me, I suppose it goes, I've put that, it takes 7 seconds for your conscious mind to know what your unconscious mind has already decided. I don't know if you saw that. Anyone see that television program where they scanned someone's brain and they made him think of a colour, and then they were looking at the scan and they could see, because one colour was coming up, lighting up one side, they could tell what colour he'd thought of before he said it. Now, that is so amazing and powerful, isn't it? You think about it, our unconscious mind, all that stuff that's going on in our unconscious mind, is already made its mind up before we suddenly think, I think I'll have shepherd's pie for dinner tonight. You already thought of that. And the interesting thing is, you know, your conscious mind is only the tiniest bit of what's happening to you. If I said to you, focus your conscious mind now on your seat, on the chair, suddenly you think, oh, yes, my bottom is firmly on the chair, good. If I said to you, focus your conscious mind on blinking, you'd suddenly think, oh, yeah, I am blinking. There's so much going on in your unconscious mind. And the point about this idea of habits is all of those habits are way down in the unconscious mind. And actually, if you're going to get to those habits and change them if you need to with some people, you have to actually dig down and get down to the beliefs and values. Because when you get down to the beliefs and values, that's when you can change that. You can't change them superficially. You've got to make people actually believe that learning is important, to then have the self-talk and the excitement, the physical responses, and the attitudes and behaviours that become habitual, and then they don't even think about it. One of the things, little pieces of training that I do sometimes is think about what do the best learners do. You know those kids that actually you perhaps don't come across very often, but they learn almost without a teacher's help. They're just natural born learners, and they've been nurtured from very young to be curious and inquisitive and risk taking and determined and resilient and all those things. And all of those, they don't think about it consciously, they've been nurtured as habitual behaviour. So I suppose the thing about trying to install, as Asha has done, the belief that learning is important, that we can deliver, anything is possible, is massively important, and that hopefully illustrates that. Finally, I would suppose, you know, the top 10 things for being a great teacher and for being a great student, they all tie in. It's the same skills, it's the same qualities, isn't it? All those things, you know, are important for teachers and for students, and for teachers to model for students. You know, being creative, being reflective, being curious. You know, having that idea of your teachers using variety and humour and novelty shamelessly to try and get the kids engaged. Having that sort of sense of persistence and knowing, as Carol Dweck says, that intelligence is learnable. Absolutely learnable. And that means that they don't have to label themselves as thick or stupid, as perhaps they have been thought throughout their school life since they were 7 years old, that they have a brain that's massively powerful. We just have to find the ways to switch it on. And of course, if teachers have that self-belief, there's a lot of research showing teachers believe that. If teachers really believe intelligence is learnable and we can create, you know, raise IQs and raise abilities, and the children believe that as well, the youngsters believe it as well, you've got the synergy for creating fantastic progress. So really, for me, you know, the opportunity is enacting all of that out. And I've got my little quote there, which and it's you living it. You know, you as leaders modelling all of this stuff, hopefully, for the students and for the whole college. And you know, embracing continuous change, because it's not going to stop, and us growing through change. And that's one of my favourite little pictures, because I feel, probably like you do, it's the hardest times, the most challenging times in your life that make you stronger and that make you able to take on the next challenge. It's not the easy bits. It's not when it's easy. It's when you're really up against it that you actually do grow the most. So thanks for listening, and that's it.